Hello, my friend. It is ADHD Coach Catherine, and this is another episode of ADHD Powerful Possibilities, the podcast that's here to bring you reliable, useful, and hopefully interesting news and strategies all about ADHD. Thank you for the lovely feedback from last week. It's great to see so many of you connecting the dots and understanding that we need to use our strengths as well as our executive functions and understand ourselves and how our ADHD affects us to really have what I think of as a great life, which is one that's meaningful for you with strategies that allow you to thrive and to use your creative possibility-seeking brain whenever possible. I'd like to invite you to an online live seminar I'm giving on Monday the 3rd of June 2024 at 7 p.m. UK time, where I'm going to be talking about the things I've been explaining here and how they all join together. The things that you may not think are essential for people with ADHD, and hopefully we'll have time for some questions and answers. And I will include a link in the show notes where you can sign up. Or, as always, you can go to my social media profile, and there's a link there too. But let's get on to the meat and potatoes. Today we are talking about focus and flow. And focus and flow are two kind of fashionable topics, a bit like ADHD itself. It's something that we wish we had more of. We feel frustrated and maybe a bit ashamed if we can't focus. And then there are people, especially those among my clients, who almost feel they have too much focus or it's in the wrong place at the wrong time. And so I thought today what we could do is explain what focus is, what's happening in your brain when you're focusing, and why is it slightly different when we have ADHD. Move into flow and why flow is so satisfying, and is it any different from hyperfocus? And of course, finish off with some practical help and support, some strategies you might want to try. And so, in the words of Billy Connolly, without further ado, let's have a look at focus. When we talk about focus, we really mean how we concentrate our attention, or being fancy, cognitive resources, on a task or activity while ignoring distractions around us. Can you see the problem already? Because it uses our executive functions and several of them at the same time, particularly our attention control, our impulse or inhibitory control, and our working memory, people with ADHD understandably find coordinating all of that more challenging. If you've been around for any length of time in my podcast, you know that the thinner connections between our prefrontal cortex and other areas of our brain in ADHD are part of the overall diagnostic condition. But with focus, we're using attention control, impulse control, and working memory to direct your focus, your mind, towards what you're meant to be working on, traditionally what is important at any given moment. Think of your focus like a torch beam. And what we're trying to do, I don't know if you ever had one where you could twist the front and the beam would get wider and narrower. We're trying to narrow that beam down. That's focus. So for people with ADHD, there are unique challenges because of our neurological differences. ADHD mostly affects the executive functions, decision making, planning, focusing, emotional regulation, time awareness, and so on. So I thought we would have a quick look at the four main differences in people with ADHD and why it's different. The first, of course, is related to dopamine. Now, dopamine is at a lower level in ADHD brains, and dopamine is a neurotransmitter. That means it travels from neuron to neuron, and it has a key role in our motivation, reward, and the attention systems of the brain. So if you have a dopamine reward deficit or a dysregulation, then your ability to manage your attention consistently is going to be affected. So when we are given a task that we have to focus on, which doesn't have immediate feedback, It doesn't have a quick reward. It's going to be harder for our brain to sustain a level of dopamine that permits that focus. I'm going to say that again. When we are dealing with a task that does not have immediate feedback or an almost immediate reward, it's going to be harder for our brain to sustain the dopamine level required for attention and focus. That's right. Because we don't have the dopamine to begin with, we need a stronger reward and feedback to create it. But then that has to continue or our focus and attention will drop off. And that's not because we're lazy, we're bored or anything. We might feel like that, but that feeling is just the absence of dopamine. And this is why routine or less interesting or stimulating tasks feel like we're looking at a cliff that we're meant to climb, or they're just less engaging. It's like looking at a grey rock. So that's difference number one, is your dopamine. Difference number two is the variability in our attention. We may have much higher differences between our levels of attention. And again, this comes down to tasks that are repetitive, lengthy. They generally are characterized by ones that don't have much feedback or reward or interest. In contrast, we also experience hyperfocus. Hyperfocus, which can be fun for a little while, it can be too absorbing. It's when we dive headfirst into something that is really interesting or really rewarding, and it's almost impossible to stop and back out. And although hyperfocus can be really effective for productivity, and I know people in business who have worked through the night because they are just so into what they're doing and they achieve a month's worth of work in 1 or 2 days because of hyperfocus, it tends not to have the kind of control that we would want. So we can't turn it on and off. And it means that, unfortunately, we can neglect other important jobs or responsibilities that are just not interesting enough. So it's an automatic reaction. It's not strategic. It's not always useful, which could explain why so many people with ADHD, especially in business, are victims of shiny object syndrome, which we'll come back to. The third ADHD difference with focus is our sensory sensitivity. We often react more to external stimulus around us, especially background noises. I'm looking at the people who chew or the people who tap their pens. Not us, obviously, because we're allowed to tap our pens. The visual clutter that we and our workmates and families tend to accumulate, or even how things feel. That carpet under your desk, the way that your shirt feels, the surface of your desk. Things that other people can ignore, we tend to struggle with more. This means we find it much harder to focus and maintain our attention when there's more going on. So while other people might be able to narrow that torch beam of attention down and block out other things going on around them, for us, oh my stars. And the fourth difference for people with ADHD and focus is, of course, starting and completing tasks. This is something that comes up so often in sessions, and it's an executive function. Starting and finishing jobs is really difficult. It's related to planning, organizing, and maintenance, or following through on our actions. It's not because we don't understand. It's not because we don't care. It's not because we can't do it. It's not a lack of ability, but it's a neurological difference. It's actually the disability. And this is where people who are extremely capable, who are extremely bright, who achieve great things, might consistently fail to do the last 20% of a job, or they may never be able to start. And of course, the people around you are going to look at you and think, what's going on? You're amazing. Why is this not working? Because your brain is built that way, is the short answer. But that variability, that inconsistency, is really difficult for other people to see. I think of it like looking at landscape with icebergs or ice floes, and from the same level as the ground, it all looks completely smooth and white. But when you go up in the helicopter, you can see the big gaps. You can see the crevices between the ice floes. And that is a bit like ADHD and the invisible executive function challenges, particularly when it comes to focus. And that's why it's so important that we understand why focus is difficult and that we're able to advocate and explain to other people what is going on with our focus. Because until we understand our challenges and our executive function problems, we can't create the routines, the structures, the environments, the tools. We can't identify the distractions that cause problems and the elements that we need to provide just the right amount of stimulation. It's the Goldilocks brain again. And this is why knowing our own ADHD and our presentation is so important. Because then when those needs are met and we understand we're taking care of them, we can use the problem solving and creative solution finding brain to our advantage. And if you're in business, you will understand how absolutely vital that part of the problem is. If we don't take the time to do that, we are going to continue to go through the cycle of chucking idea spaghetti at the wall and nothing working. When it comes to understanding your ADHD, it's really important to have a basic awareness of the bits of your brain that are involved. I'm talking about executive functions and prefrontal cortex. So we could start there. The PFC, the prefrontal cortex, is the CEO. It's behind your eyes and your forehead, right at the front of your brain. It's responsible for the executive functions we use in focus. So planning, decision making, problem solving, organizing our activities. The PFC helps us to ignore those distractions and manage our working memory and our cognitive flexibility. So when we're trying to focus, we're asking our brain to be flexible and put things aside rather than treat everything with the same level of importance. Now, many scans and studies have shown that the ADHD brain, the prefrontal cortex, has reduced activity and reduced connections. So that's why maintaining attention and organizing, completing tasks, getting started is so difficult. It's the underactivity that is the marker, if you like, and that's what creates the challenge for us to maintain a task and build that focus. The other crucial part of your brain that you want to know about with ADHD is your basal ganglia. That's a group of nuclei which are deep within your brain. If I share slides, it's always a cut through because the stuff that really controls this is right in the middle, deep inside your brain. Now, the basal ganglia, usually thought of in terms of movement. And of course, with ADHD, we have hyperkinetic or hyperactive ADHD. But they also help us to process rewards, how we learn, and how we build those habits that I talked about before. They connect to the PFC and obviously the rest of your brain. There's no separate elements here, but these are crucial for dopamine signaling. The reward is inside the basal ganglia. So because the pathways between the basal ganglia and the PFC are different in ADHD brains, that means how we process rewards, how we are motivated, and how valuable jobs are is all different. When we have ADHD, the barrier to connecting that to action is so much steeper. So you're not imagining that it feels hard. It really is. I want to mention briefly an area of the brain that I've been looking at, which isn't talked about very often, the habenula. Now, it's a teeny tiny part of your brain, but what it does is it processes the negative feedback that we hear and the external stimuli which are provoking a negative feedback, and it influences your dopamine and serotonin pathways. What that means is it's activated when you expect a negative outcome and it inhibits dopamine release. And that means if an activity feels unrewarding, or we've had negative feedback from somebody, or there's an external stimuli which is making us feel horrible, our dopamine regulation, which is already challenged, is affected by this habenula saying, nope, nope, we're not doing that. And a few studies that I've been looking at suggest people with ADHD have a less active habenula in childhood. And as we grow up, it adapts or changes in some way, they're not sure why, that makes it overreact to stress later on. Now, there are reasons that this could happen. The suggestion is the reactivity, the overreaction of the habenula in adults means we're more likely to experience that major depressive disorder. And way back, I talked about a study in Nature that suggested adults with ADHD are 3 times more likely to experience major depression than other adults. And this is because of the habenula. And the habenula inhibits dopamine regulation. When you don't have enough dopamine, it's not just that you can't move forward. It's not that you're in a neutral state. It feels bad. The lack of dopamine feels deeply bad. And so we look for easy rewards. The biscuit barrel, the coffee cup, the cigarette break, the scroll on your phone. We're desperately looking for dopamine release without the negative feedback. So the habenula has got a lot to answer for, and I think it's not something that we talk about very often with ADHD. The last bit of your brain I want to mention briefly today is, it's kind of two parts really. So it's your parietal lobes and your anterior cingulate cortex, or ACC. I've heard the ACC mentioned a few times on Huberman type podcasts. I am not a neurologist, I'm not a scientist, I'm a coach. So the only reason I'm mentioning it is because it has a practical impact on how you live your life. And I firmly believe that when you know these things, it can actually help you feel better and help you make changes, which is my job. So your parietal lobes are near the top and back of your brain. That helps us process all the sensory information and manage where we are in space, but also our attention. In ADHD, as you can imagine, there are differences in how the parietal lobes function, and that's why it's harder to filter out the stuff we don't need, the things that are irrelevant. And that's why it's harder for us to shift our attention from one thing to the next. If you are any kind of ADHD adult, or if you're a parent of someone with ADHD, you'll have seen the difficulty moving from one thing to the next, moving that attention. That's connected to your parietal lobe. Now the ACC, or the anterior cingulate cortex, is connected to error detection and emotional regulation. So that helps us to modulate our attention or adjust it up and down based on how emotionally significant a task is. As you guessed, the ACC works differently in ADHD. We tend not to use the specific area of our brain that scientists would expect to see for ACC tasks. And that means that we are more likely to experience the emotional dysregulation. But then that also affects how we can engage with our environment and the tasks that are around us. I've looked at a few studies, and one of them compared how people with and without ADHD dealt with really challenging cognitive tasks. Both groups found it difficult, but the people with ADHD didn't activate the anterior cingulate cortex as the scientists had expected, because that helps us to decide where and when we put our attention, as well as balancing the attention and focus over time. We didn't do as well in the task. We used a different, less specialised area of the brain to manage it. So it's not that we can't do it. It's just that our brain bypasses the bit that isn't working the way it needs and finds somewhere else. Actually, our brain's doing a great job with what it's got. But that's why we struggle sometimes to figure out what to focus on and when. This is why, for so many of us, having a thinking partner, whether that's a friend or a family member or a coach, not someone who tells us what to do, but who can support us to think about that focus, what to focus on and when, is so helpful, because we're accessing their anterior cingulate cortex. And I lied. The last bit is actually your default mode network. I've mentioned this a few times, but your default mode network, or the DMN, involves the areas of your brain that are active when we rest. So when you daydream, when you think about standing at a bus stop and looking off into space. We used to think of it as the resting state, the resting brain, but actually with fMRIs, thank goodness, we can see how busy your brain is when it's doing that. And they discovered that the DMN uses areas like your posterior cingulate cortex, your medial prefrontal cortex, and the lateral and inferior parietal cortex. So it's a really wonderfully juicy, complicated network. And that's more active when we're thinking about men, when we're looking at things from other angles, if we're taking time to look at a problem or a situation from somebody else's perspective. That's your DMN. Normally, when we're on a task with a goal, a completion, the DMN deactivates and allows the attentional networks to take over. You guessed it. With ADHD, the DMN just doesn't quiet down when it's needed to. When we need to focus, the DMN doesn't switch off in the same way, and that's because of the weaker connections between control centers and the DMN. It's harder for them to regulate it. It's a bit like you're trying to talk to someone down a crackly phone line. They can't quite hear you. Or for a more modern example, my goodness, I'm showing my age, when you're on a Zoom call and the network freezes because your bandwidth is limited. So you miss bits of the sentence. And this is true in everybody with ADHD, children, teenagers, and adults, whether they take medication or not. The reduced or absent balance between the cognitive control network and the DMN is consistent. And because we don't have that separation between task positive and default mode, our attention lapses. It's not that we're deliberately zoning out. Your brain is literally trying to shift gear while you're in the middle. If you listen way back to one of the first episodes of the podcast, I talked about a Land Rover I used to have. You had to hold it in third gear going round a roundabout, or it would just jump out into neutral and the car would stop going round this busy roundabout. That's the ADHD brain. We might be in the middle of doing filing or admin. If we catch an interesting article in a magazine that we maybe tore out and left in the pile of paper, guess what? Your emotional interest center activates, and the weaker control that is trying to keep you focused on the important but boring task is got no chance. But one of the most powerful things that we can use when we're managing ADHD, I should leave you hanging, shouldn't I, if I want you to listen to the rest of the episode. But I'm going to tell you, one of the most important things you can do apart from education is self-talk. How we talk about and to ourselves is really important when it comes to managing all of these aspects of your brain. Now, before we get on to the strategies, I thought we'd take a quick look at flow, because flow sometimes feels a bit like focus, and it is. So flow is a state where we are completely immersed in an activity, where we have focus, but it's a kind of vibrant, energized focus. We're fully involved, the blinkers are on, and we're enjoying it. It's almost like we have this dual sense of the process and the activity at the same time. And the person who identified it and gave it this name is a psychologist called Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. I apologize, I probably pronounced that badly. But the characteristics of flow are complete concentration on the task, really clear goals and immediate feedback, sense of control over the task, the quieting of that inner critic, and the loss of self-consciousness. We're not worrying about how we look when we're doing something or what other people are thinking. Time changes. We feel like it's flying past, and it's something we love to do for its own sake. That intrinsic motivation. We do it because we love it. Focus we're looking at a specific task or activity and ignoring distractions. It tends to be something that we choose. There's effort involved. And in your brain, it's mostly the prefrontal cortex and those executive functions. With flow, it's a deeper state where you're not just focused, but engaged. You're emotionally engaged. Enjoyment, satisfaction, savoring are all part of the process. It feels effortless. We don't have to try. It's automatic. And the brain part that's working in flow is a balance between the prefrontal cortex, obviously, but also the basal ganglia and the release of the neurotransmitters, the dopamine and endorphins. The default mode network tends to quiet down, but the dopamine and endorphins provide this wonderful feedback loop that keep us going. I would love to hear if you've experienced states of flow and if you can recognize what was it that made it so rewarding? Because I have an idea, but I'm keen to hear from you as well. If you've experienced flow, when was it? Is it something that you can repeat? Or is it so rare you wish you could experience it again? But you can email or send me a message on social media. Let's look at practical strategies, questions that you can use to help you with focus and flow. Csikszentmihalyi said that flow is more likely to happen when we're involved in tasks that are goal-oriented, that is, they have an outcome, that provide clear, immediate feedback, are just challenging enough, and also ones that we enjoy, that are self-motivated, self-chosen. But you can learn to increase your experience of flow by using some of the same strategies that I would use for focus. So let's combine the strategies for focus and flow. First of all, get very clear on what the outcome is. If you need to focus on something, does it have a clear end point, a clear goal? And if it's a long-term one, what's your first milestone? Get that very clear to begin with. Get as much feedback as you can, either from the process or the task, or from somebody around you. And that will help you to stay engaged and to adjust and course correct as you go along. You want to make sure that any task you're attempting and you need to focus on, or ideally tip over into flow, is got just the right amount of challenge. It's got to have enough to push your ability without making you feel like you can't complete it. Because the secret to flow is that your brain is able to predict the outcome correctly, repeatedly. It's not a smooth river. It's taking tiny snapshots and thinking, if I do this, this will happen over and over again, and getting it right. That's why you get the dopamine and the endorphins. So whenever you do something, try to aim for something that pushes you a little bit, but still gives you the reward of being right. And if you're going to struggle with it, get support and make sure that you have some scaffolding in there to give you help. Because if it's too hard, you'll feel stressed and bored and the dopamine goes away and so does our focus. Think about your environment. Try to find an environment where your interruptions and your sensory distractions are minimized. If you can't remove all the things, make sure that the sensory input, whether that's noise, touch, smell, lighting, is not going to be a hindrance to you. Next, think about your mindfulness. And I've talked about mindfulness quite a lot on the podcast, but I'm thinking about that being in the present moment as a mindfulness rather than specific meditation. And mindfulness meditation is brilliant if you can do it, but literally start with 5-second increments of being present in your body, having your feet flat on the floor, feeling the seat or the bench, whatever you're sitting on, having an awareness of the heaviness of your head, thinking about the breath as it comes in cold and goes out warm. Congratulations, you just done some mindfulness. It's that simple. Well done, because so many of my clients say, I can't do mindfulness, I'm just thinking all the time. Well, you just did it. And it doesn't matter if it was for 5 or 10 seconds. That is a start. So well done. And the last thing to encourage your focus and flow is to think about it regularly. If we are busy people and constantly interrupted, your brain is not going to get into the habit of focus, and it's certainly not going to get into the habit of flow. Obviously, this has to be adjusted to your individual circumstances and life pattern. And I know many parents find that the time between 10 and 12 in the evening is when they actually get things done, because kids are in bed, TV's off, hopefully the dishes are done, and you can sit down and do some work. And that's why it's really important to look after your sleep hygiene and see if you can nudge that back a little bit. But if that's where you are in your life, then maximise rest and restorative sleep in other areas. It's one of the reasons why thinking about planning and planners, as much as it's a cliche and people say, oh, have you tried a planner? It does actually help a little bit. The trick is to find the right one for you, and the one that you will consistently use is the right one. Find a planner that you are comfortable with and that you will use. Don't worry if you drop it after a few weeks. That's okay. You can come back. I'm a big fan of dotted journals and bullet journals for that reason, because it is flexible. But when we have a layout of our day, we can start to see areas where, oh, I could have half an hour there. I could maybe manage 25 minutes. Start with that, and then you can build up your focus times. But at the same time as we're trying to build up focus, make sure you're getting enough relaxation and taking breaks. There's research that says we have around 4 hours of productive work per day. There is a lot of evidence that is how much time we have. For many people, it's broken up into teeny tiny pieces. If you're able to make it a clear section, then just power through it. And we can talk in future about what your week might look like, what your month might look like. It's something that I love doing with clients. It's part of the program I've developed, ADHD Rising, which I will talk about in the seminar on Monday the 3rd of June. But this ability to have a 4-hour block, it's not something many people can have. Let's put it that way. However, should you choose to pursue it, getting it all done, sprinting is a very ADHD thing to do. Instead of breaking things up and making them into a marathon throughout the whole day. The last two things I want to mention are specifically for people with ADHD, and especially adults. But if you're an adult with a young child or a person, you can model this for them. So the first thing you can do is think about how you talk to yourself and about yourself. There's a lot of data showing that positive self-regard, talking nonsense, talking badly about yourself, these can have positive and negative effects on your mental health and your productivity. So, for instance, I was talking to Julia from the Positive Psychology College today, and she was saying when she completes a task on her to-do list, she doesn't just tick the box, which I love. She then writes, "You did it!" and gives herself an exclamation mark and a smiley face. It sounds ridiculous, but that positive cheerleading, that celebration, that acknowledgement of what we've done, that makes us feel good because it releases dopamine. And remember, we mentioned the habenula way back earlier in the program. When you are speaking badly about yourself, oh, I'm so forgetful, I'm so lazy, how could I forget that? And all the negative patterns that are very easy, your habenula hears that. Your mind and your brain are not always serving each other. And so your brain says, oh, there's some negative feedback. I'm going to reduce the dopamine exactly when you don't want it to go away, because then you feel terrible. Think about a few supportive, affirming phrases that allow you to build up your focus and be genuinely warm and compassionate with yourself. You can use phrases from the loving kindness meditations. You can say, may I be kind to myself, all these kind of things. Or you can say something like, I got this, okay, I got this, I did it. And just recognizing that, it works. It's not difficult, it's not complicated, but remembering to do it, that is why I just bought myself a little pack of heart-shaped pastel coloured post-it notes. And of course, keep going with the physical breaks, the movement breaks, stretch yourself. There's a lovely chap on Instagram called Adam Richardson who's very funny, and he's got wonderful movement breaks that I'm using for my poor shoulders and neck. Find somebody who makes you smile and use their movement breaks, their little YouTube videos, whatever, to move your body during your focus time if you can. And of course, remember, your brain finds this so much harder. You're trying to roller skate in ice skates. When we give ourselves a hard time for not being able to focus, it makes it even harder. If you are finding an important task difficult, pop on your ADHD glasses, your ADHD lens. I have a pair of pineapple ones which I might break out for sharing this information. Tell your brain, this is important because, and explain the meaning and the interest, not just the importance. And understand that your brain needs the information of meaning and interest to allow it to do the task in the first place. Because without the meaning and the interest, we don't have the dopamine. So establish, this is connected to my vision to go to Bali next year. If I do my taxes and I get this many clients in the next 3 months, I will go to Bali next year. To do that, I need to create this type of plan. I need to do this work. Think about it in that sort of context. What does the task form a part of in connection to your vision, to your values, to the meaning and interest of the overall picture? So I really hope you found this helpful as well as interesting. Sure, if you're still hanging around here, you are a big fan of the human brain, as I am. I have got a link in the show notes so that you can come along to the seminar where I'll talk more about this kind of thing and we can have a proper conversation. I do occasionally have one-to-one coaching openings, so if you're interested, you can contact me as well. But more than anything, I would love you to get in touch and just tell me which part of this information is the one that you are going to use. What has changed now that you understand what's going on in your brain and you've got a few ideas to throw in there that you maybe haven't tried before? Please get in touch and let me know which one you're going to use. And if you've used one and had success, share it. Let's support each other. As always, you can get in touch with me on social media. The show notes contain references to the studies I've mentioned, as well as other resources. And until next time, take care.